Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. Dan Rosen here, and as always, Sean Rourke out there. Sean, we got a big show today. We got Brett Peterson, the new assistant general manager for the Florida Panthers, and the former Philadelphia Flyers great John LeClair. So big show as we continue to talk hockey as we await some news, hopefully coming soon, of when we'll hopefully have a season to start.
Yes, it's been fantastic. It's been a pause, and there hasn't been a ton of hockey since the Stanley Cup Finals and the draft got over and a little bit of free agent frenzy. But we've done our part here at the podcast. We've had some great guests on during the season and now, and today's show is no different. Brett Peterson's making history as the first Black assistant GM in the history of the NHL with the Florida Panthers, and that's fantastic. And then who doesn't want to catch up with Johnny LeClair? He was one of my favorite players when he was in the NHL. You think about that line that he played on the Legion of Doom with Eric Lindros, who we've had on our podcast as well. Now we just got to need to get the other piece now, right?
Yeah,
we'll have the whole thing. We get Michael Renberg and we'll have the whole Legion of Doom. So we'll work on that. Bob Bender will get that going for us and we'll see what we can make happen. But, plenty of news happening. We're making news here on the podcast. So it's been great.
The best name for a line in the history of the NHL, the Legion of Doom. I mean, it really doesn't get much better than Legion of Doom for a line. Anyway,
in Philly, no less.
In Philly,
the
no
Legion
less,
of
right.
Doom. In I mean, that line. If there was ever a line that personified a city, it was the Legion of Doom in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
If they could only have played when they came up with Vengeance Now.
I was just going to say.
It would have been the hat trick.
I was going to say, but Vengeance Now, Sean. Vengeance Now. anyway, let's look back, though. Before we go ahead with this podcast, remember last week we had Bill Daly on, the deputy commissioner of the National Hockey League. And, Bill laid it out for us of what they're planning, what they're looking ahead and the possible formats for the schedule and whatnot. And he said January 1st still remains the target date or in and around that time to start. And you rewind it back, training camp's got to be mid-December, some quarantine, seven teams that didn't return to play come a week before that, some quarantining that has to go on in market when players come in. You got to rewind it back from there. So we're getting more into crunch time than we even were last week. And there's still a lot of issues that the two sides, the National Hockey League and the NHLPA, are ironing out. So we're hoping to get an announcement in the coming days here. But again, I mean, time is short and there's a lot of hurdles here.
There are a lot of hurdles and time for January 1st is short. It's not as short if you push it back a little bit,
right?
Which, is an option. And again, we talked about this on the podcast last week. I thought the NHL was really well served by waiting to the last minute to make decisions before they did the playoffs and the bubbles and where those were located. So, I think you take your time, you figure everything out, you see where COVID is going, as we kind of enter this third wave and winter time and the wild card of a vaccine and when that arrives and everything else that goes with it. But, these are topics we could talk about in the coming weeks as we wait. Like you just think about what training camp's going to be like, right? And how are players going to get there? How big is it going to be? One of the things that I've heard talked about a lot in listening to the radio and podcasts is, and you mentioned it, are these teams that didn't make the playoffs, getting to have a camp early and whether or not they're at a disadvantage to the teams that played. And a lot of people would argue that the teams that got knocked out in the first or second round only played 3 games, 5 games, whatever it was. But to me, the biggest thing was a lot of those teams got to bring in players that never played, but got to be introduced to the team, got to practice with guys. Like that's a huge part of it. And that's a part that I think even these teams, if they have that extra week, are not going to have that luxury of because their players are already in their seasons, right? In Europe or in juniors or wherever it is. So the rosters that are going to go to camp are going to be weird because it's not going to be a typical, here's our 25 guys that are fighting for positions. Here's our number one draft picks. Here's a bunch of free agent guys. I think you're going to have those free agent guys because I think you're going to need a big pool to play from. If you look at the NFL and the way that guys have gone on and off the COVID list and everything else that's happened to it, I think you're going to have a pretty good pool of players that you know about that you can call in off the street and say, hey, we're a little short for 2 weeks. You know, we need somebody to play. And you don't know if your AHL team's playing. You don't know if your ECHL team's playing. So roster management, I think, is going to be so interesting going forward.
Well, and one of the things, too, with that, that's why I think January 1st or in and around that date's important for the National Hockey League, because the AHL announced February 5th, right? So you have that extra time where you can have some of those AHL guys in your camp and on a reserve list before the AHL season started. So you're not stealing away from your AHL team in season for at least a month. And I think that does help, you know, but you're right. I think you're going to have a larger pool of players. It's just the reality of where we are right now. And look, we wanted to get into it. Speaking of some players, there's some big names out there that are UFAs still that are unsigned. And I think along with the restricted free agents, and we could talk about one in particular because our colleague Tom Galitti did a story, talked to Jarmo Kekalainen from Columbus about Pierre-Luc Dubois, who's also who's one of those restricted free agents. I just think once we get a format, once we get dates for when things are going to go in, dates are deadlines. And then once you have the deadlines, things will get done. But Pierre-Luc Dubois, one of several RFAs out there, and Jarmo Kekalainen says, look, if he wants to play in the National Hockey League this year, he's got to sign a contract with the Columbus Blue Jackets because he ain't playing anywhere else, right? So I just think once we have a deadline here with some dates, we'll start getting some of these contracts done.
Yeah, well, and I also think once we have some sort of clarity of what the season's going to look like, number of games, whether you're playing with fans, look, teams need to know what their bottom line's going to be. If you're going to go out and you're going to sign Mike Hoffman, you need to know what you have, right? As for financially, not even salary cap wise, what your revenue is going to be, what your revenue might be, what your revenue could be. I mean, nobody's just taking money and saying, here, I'm not sure if I have this money, but I'm going to give it to this guy so he can play for me. So, you know, I think there's going to be a waiting game for guys like Hoffman, you know, Zdeno Chara in Boston, you know, whether he goes back to Boston or not, or signs somewhere else. And, you know, the more you think about that as you sit here and you have a lot of free time and, you know, you think about Chara playing for another team. I know he's already played. This is the Bruins are his third team, but there's no question he's a Boston Bruin. When you think, I actually had to remember that he played for the Islanders, you know, and you remember Ottawa, of course, and him leaving there, but he's a Bruin. And, you know, as much as it's going to be weird to see Joe Thornton play in Toronto this year, if Zdeno Chara decides to play and has to play someplace else, it'll be jarring to say.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Henrik Lundqvist got new pads and helmet now that have, you know, are all DC, you know, he's going to be playing with the Washington Capitals. Like you mentioned, Joe Thornton's now going to be with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I mean, we remember that Thornton played for Boston, but he's a San Jose Shark. I mean, that's what he is. And now he's going to be with the Leafs. And there's other, I mean, Marty Brodeur went and played a couple of games with the St. Louis Blues. Who would have ever thought that could happen, right? So it certainly can happen. Corey Perry was an Anaheim Ducks for years, and that's what you remember him as. And he just played for the Dallas Stars, and he's one of those unrestricted free agents that, you know, along with Hoffman and Mikael Granlund and Sammy Vatanen, Ilya Kovalchuk is another one. You know, that the list is, it's not loaded with superstars, but these are important players that really could add to a team. And I think you're right. The bottom line matters for teams. And I think it's going to matter too, Sean. And it just popped into my head. Like, what if, you know, a team can have some fans in the stands? How does that impact their bottom line? What if they're playing in arena and you can fill 20% of your building or 25% of your building based on regulations and whatnot, where others don't? That could also impact the bottom line. So I just think once we know exactly what we're dealing with, then we'll start to see more of these guys get their contracts.
You mentioned all those guys, and I think you forgot the most interesting one of all, and that's Duclair.
Well, he kind of did that to himself.
Yeah, but now he's a free agent, and look, it's a horrible time for him to be a free agent with what he had on the table. But I think, you know, at some point somebody's going to sign him, and if he played like he did last year, they're going to get a hell of a deal out of it.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I think he's a good player, and he's been on a lot of teams, though. You wonder, like, are there red flags there? Because he's been on several teams, chose to represent himself did not take the deal with the Senators. Is there red flags? I wonder if GMs think along those lines.
He scores goals.
He scores goals. That's right. And so does Mike Hoffman, by the way.
Somebody, both of them. Somebody will take a flyer on him. And I'm not leaving any hints there. Flyer in the sense of a chance. And
no, you're just talking about John LeClair, our second, who will be a guest of ours on this podcast. Yeah. That's all you're talking about.
But somebody will take a flyer on him, and I think it's going to pay off. I think he's one of those players that it took him a long time to figure out the NHL, and it took him a long time to figure out who he was in the NHL and how to be a professional and you know, how to maximize his potential. But the proof is certainly there, and I think if you put him in the right situation, you're going to get him at a discount at this point, and he'll certainly help whoever signs him.
Maybe I agree
more than anybody else on that list.
Yeah, no, you can make an argument for that. Although I think Mike Hoffman, with his ability to score goals, especially being on a power play, I think he could have the biggest impact of guys that, you know, that we've mentioned there. But most importantly, Sean, and before we get to our first guest, who is Brett Peterson, the new assistant general manager for the Florida Panthers, believed to be the first Black assistant general manager in National Hockey League history. But most importantly, what's your favorite reverse retro jersey?
Oh, it's not even a contest. It's one and then 30, right? It's the Colorado Avalanche.
The old Nordiques, yeah.
Like, that's me as a kid watching the Nordiques on Channel 38, watching Ron Tugnutt make 70 saves. Like, that's just, that goes back to the Stastnys and everything else. You know, I thought the Carolina one was cool because it's the Hartford Whalers, but they went gray, right? So it's their own interpretation of it. You're not really buying a Hartford Whalers knockoff jersey. Like, it's kind of its own thing. And again, those bring back tons of memories. But for the newer ones, or the ones that are completely different, you know, I really like the Kings one. And I think the Devils one is fantastic, right? It's the old Christmas tree, but with the colors that were always the secondary colors, now the primary colors. I think it's really sharp.
Well, I mean, I go to my son for these things. He's 11 years old, and he loved the Buffalo Sabres ones with the two swords, the Sabre swords. Yeah. The only thing I didn't really love about that was Buffalo written on the bottom of the jersey. But my favorite one, other than the Avalanche one, because that to me is the no-brainer of it all. I agree with you on that. I love the Calgary Flames one with the flames coming out of the horse head. And the color scheme in that, I thought that one, I like that one the most, other than, you know, Colorado. But there are some good ones there. I mean, and you know, you got the whale, right, for Carolina, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some good ones there. I like the Minnesota Wild one.
The color scheme is fantastic.
It's fantastic. And look, the Kings one is great, but you know, that classic Canadiens CH is also. I mean, how can you not love the classic Canadian CH? That's hockey history right there.
Well, and the color scheme is so different from anything that the Canadians have ever done. It's more blue than it is red, and it's always been a red team. But the one I got to ask you about, and to me, it's perfect because it's who they are and who they were, is the Ducks.
Oh my God. Yes. The Ducks they did it. Like, I saw it and I don't even know how to describe that one, to be honest with you.
It's Wild Wing on the front of the jersey.
Yeah.
And I think
it was their first, third jersey, wasn't it? Right. I mean, I think that was like their original third jersey. If you can have an original third jersey and it's like, it's Disney, it's cartoonish, it's Wild Wing, and it's different, and I bet you it sells. I bet you it sells.
And that's who they were when they came into the league, and I don't think you hide from that. Like, they've become something different. They're, you know, they're a California franchise that's had success, that's, you know, obviously professional and everything else, but they came in as a Disney product.
Yeah.
They came in being different from everybody else, much in the same way the Golden Knights came in when they came in and they're like, we're not going to be like everybody else. We're going to do our own thing. That's what the Anaheim Mighty Ducks at the time did with their color schemes, with the duck logo. You know, it was all, you know, cartoonish and it worked. I mean, people really identified with Anaheim early on because of that. And then they morphed into a more traditional team, and you know, they won a Stanley Cup and all the things that they've done. But I have no issue with going back to your roots and celebrating them. And I think that's what that Anaheim jersey does.
Well, I think that's what a lot of these can do. And you mentioned Vegas, right? They didn't, I mean, they're not that old, obviously, but they went back to the roots of hockey in Las Vegas to form their jersey. I thought that was a cool way to pay homage to the history of hockey in Las Vegas, which obviously is growing now with the Golden Knights. But the interesting stuff, those reverse retro jerseys, I mean, look, I mean, they're talking points now, and people will buy them, and you know, and that's the good thing. I mean, they're gonna get sold, and the Avalanche one, I saw a report, somebody said the Avalanche one is like the hottest selling item in Denver right now, you know, and it pays homage to the Quebec Nordiques of all things, but pretty cool. No doubt about it. Anyway, Sean, you ready to get to our first guest?
Yeah. But the one thing I want to see on the ice before we get to our first guest is those all white pants, white gloves, white jerseys, Dallas Stars with a little bit of green trim, little Darth Vader look going on there. I mean, Stormtrooper look, but, yeah. You know, you've seen pictures of it, but I want to see six guys on the ice in all white and just flying around. I'm going to reserve my judgment until I actually see it in action.
Well, and they could play the Detroit Red Wings, because that one's a lot of all white too, with the winged wheel on it. And so nobody will know who anybody is, and it'll be a little bit blinding on the ice, especially with the white ice behind it, but could be kind of cool to see. Anyway, maybe you darken the rink for it and put some, like, maybe like glow the jerseys a little bit, you know? Anyway, have we done enough on the reverse retro jerseys? Because we're not exactly fashionistas here, you know?
Well, speak for yourself, Dan. I am a fashionista, but we're ready to get on to the guest portion of the thing of the podcast here, and let's make it happen.
Yeah, definitely. So Brett Peterson is our first guest. We were able to record an interview with him, the Panthers assistant GM, named that to that position on Tuesday, and believed to be the first Black assistant general manager in the National Hockey League. Here is that interview with Brett Peterson. Brett, thank you so much for jumping on with us. So Tuesday was a big day. You know, you get named the assistant GM with the Florida Panthers. Take us through your emotions of that day and what this means for you.
Well, it was obviously a very special day. Exciting for myself, my family, everybody that teammates, coaches, that has been along with me along this ride. So it's a big day for the game of hockey. I think that it's something that everyone's excited about.
It always strikes me when you look at somebody's journey, and very rarely is it the one that they imagine, right? When they started whatever career they're in. And I don't imagine that when you started, your goal when you were turning 40 would be to be in a front office. I'm sure it was to play and to do other things. As you look at the journey that you've taken and where it's taken you, are you surprised to find yourself here now?
I've always had such a passion for the game of hockey and sports in general. I wouldn't say that I'm surprised. I'm more of it's exciting because it's been a lot of hard work and little bitty blocks along the way to get to this point. So, you know, it's I think whenever you set out for goals, and that is to be, you know, for me at the time, it was just to be successful in the game of hockey, and you start to see those things come to fruition. It's just, it's a euphoria.
You know, I read a quote from you, Brett, the other day where you know, in regards to being the first, right? The first Black assistant GM in the NHL, you said, I'm just so happy that there could be a second and there could be a third and a fourth, right? So I wonder if you can compare and contrast those feelings of being the first, but also knowing that the barrier is broken and more can come. You know, those two things are linked, but just what does it mean to you to be the first, and what does it mean to know that more can come along the way now?
Well, you know, I'm humbled. I mean, I think even since when I was playing hockey, you see, you know, such an increase of people of color playing the game of hockey, which has spoken volumes of the progress that we've made. I think that, you know, for me, it's important to continue to help our game. I really think that I'm just in service of the game of hockey that I love. And it's this is, you know, we're at a time, you know, I used to joke when I played, there was a lot more clutch and grabbing, scraps and all that stuff. And, you know, you'd grab a guy and, you know, there'd be a little scrum and you just grabbed the guy. You didn't ask where he was from. You just grabbed him, you know? And I think that's the way I look at this situation is, you know, it needed to be done. And I'm happy to be it.
There's a familiarity level there. I mean, the man who hired you has been one of your mentors since your playing days, since basically you were in the ECHL. Can you talk a little bit about that relationship and how it impacted your willingness to move from the player agent side to the management side?
Well, you know, Billy's one of the smartest guys I've ever been around. You know, he's detail oriented. He's hardworking. And for me, one of the things going through my career is I've always just wanted to surround myself with people that could hopefully somehow make me better. And, you know, Billy got me started in the agent game and I loved it. And, you know, it's something that I'll greatly miss because of those relationships. But having the opportunity to follow him again and learn from him on this side of the aisle is something that is just amazing. And, you know, he's going to do great things for our franchise. And I'm just excited to be part of it.
Talk about that transition now. You know, I mean, going from the player side to the team side, what will you miss from the player agent side? And what do you think you gain now from being on the team side?
Well, what I will miss is the relationships. You know, I mean, you know, you take a lot of these guys that I've had from a very young age. And I mean, there is nothing better than sitting at a draft and one of the guys that you picked and you meet with parents and you're like, yeah, he's going to play. And they're looking at you like at 15 heads and you, they have that minute. And then they get to their first game and, you know, they have the hot lap by themselves. I mean, there's nothing better than that because you've actually individually grabbed the person and you've helped them along that journey. And a lot of things that what we do, you see them on a bigger scale, but you never get to actually individually live it with them. So I'll miss that part of it. The relationships that I've made with my players and clients and families, those will never go away. But I definitely will miss that part of it. But on the other side, I think you'll have an appreciation level for the development and the struggles of the players and being able to have conversations and give them sound advice on what they need to do to become an NHLer and get themselves into a place where they're going to be able to help our team. And you know, that's going to be fun because I think when I was playing, you know, there's a lot of in hockey, you're forced to kind of read between the lines. Right. And oftentimes as a kid, as a player, myself as a player, you just want to be told, you know, like you just want to be told, like, this is why you're not here. And it doesn't always taste good, but you know what? You know now what you need to work on. So that's something that I'm excited to be a part of.
As far as agents go, I would assume, you know, when you look at the Florida Panthers now, all three guys in the front office are former agents. So you guys have some tricks up your sleeves when it comes to negotiating. You know what's going to happen across the table from you, I'm guessing.
Well, yeah, no, we know all the tricks now, so that's good.
What's your role going to be?
You know, we're getting down there, and you know, obviously in this COVID times, we're trying to figure, you know, building out our staff, and you know, my role is going to be, obviously I'll be very active with the Panthers outreach in the community. One of my biggest priorities is along with helping on the player development side and you know, the youth of our players is really getting South Florida excited about hockey. And, you know, we've got just some tremendous pieces. We've got a Hall of Fame coach. I mean, we've got an excellent GM, a fantastic ownership. It's just going to be an exciting time. And I want to replicate what they've done so well up the road there in Tampa downtown.
And you had mentioned it. You said this is a market that's ready to pop, right? How much of that pop has to be associated with success on the ice for the Florida Panthers?
Well, I think that's a large piece of it. I mean, you know, we're in a results-based business, right? But I think it's also more about, you know, people want to identify with our players. They want to know our players. They want to be excited about them. They want, you know, our players to be in the community and helping, you know, greater Fort Lauderdale and Broward County be a better place. And you know, that's something that, you know, it's going to be interesting to see evolve with us.
When you were looking at the Panthers and you were thinking about taking this job, and I saw some of your comments where, you know, it was difficult to make that choice because you felt like you still had an ascendancy as far as being an agent and places to go there. What attracted you to Florida, and what do you think is the missing piece there right now?
Well, you know, I mean, I spent some time across the state there in the East Coast League, so I was familiar with Southwest Florida, familiar with South Florida, and, you know, have a bunch of relationships down there. So that was always appealing to me. And then also with the relationships that I have within the organization, friends that I would call going back a long time, you know, and we're going to kind of work through that. You know, I don't think that there is an actual answer to that right this second. We're going to try to piece it together, and we're going to try to make sure that, you know, our team competes, and they're good people, and we're successful.
And Brett, you had a career in the minors. Yeah, I think it was, what, 340 games that you played in the minor leagues, a bunch in the East Coast League, some in the AHL, a couple in the IHL. I wonder if any of that experience of what you went through and trying to build up your hockey career as a minor leaguer can play now as you work with players, you know, as you work with, you know, the player development side, you know, on the NHL side of it, on the team side of it, what do you draw from? What do you gain from your days as a player that you can now bring to a different side of it?
Well, I think it's just, you know, as kids in this game, you know, you can't keep playing this game without, you know, the belief that you're going to play the National Hockey League. I mean, just, that's why we played. I was on that Bone Rattler bus for a long time, and it's some scary trips. You know, I remember driving from Atlantic City to Peoria, Illinois, 17 hours, no lights on the bus, no power. You know, so many guys in this game have so many stories about that. But I mean, that is what I hope to reignite, not just with our guys, but, you know, I hope people reignite that across the National Hockey League. Like, you know, we've got such a fantastic product, and we're so lucky to be in this position. So, you know, why not run with it and have some fun? But, you know, don't forget that, you know, there is a bunch of guys somewhere that are sitting there, you know, chomping on their fingernails for the chance to maybe have a warm up. So, I'm hoping to bring a lot more of that excitement back and maybe reignite that with some of the guys and just get excited about it.
Have you thought at all, and I know it's only been a couple of days, about how unique this year is going to be, especially when it comes to player development, because of everything that's happening during COVID and the fact that, you know, the ECHL is going to play a split season. Some teams aren't going to play. The USHL is having issues. All the Canadian leagues are having issues. I mean, players that are developing now within your system and that are going to be drafted in the future are facing challenges that nobody's faced before. Have you thought at all about how that's going to impact what you guys need to do in Florida?
Well, listen, I mean, I think everybody, we're in a time, you know, not just hockey, but in the world, you're going to have to be flexible, right? And we're going to have to make edits and audits as we move forward. So we have thought about it. It's an evolving thought process, right? And figuring out how we can help the players. You know, we used to always say, like, help players help themselves. And you know, our job is just to make sure that they have the resources. And, you know, we're doing our work to make sure that these guys in these crazy times give themselves a chance to be at the top of their form.
What we're going through now, do you think it will change the way player development is executed? I guess is a word you could use. I mean, will it enhance player development? I mean, you think when we come out of this, hopefully eventually, will we have new models for player development too?
I think so. I mean, I don't know exactly how it will look, but I think, you know, it's forcing all of us to engage with people differently, right? So, and a lot of times, you know, I think, like, all the trips and the car rides that I made just for you know, you look back at them of how we're managing it now, and you're like, oh, I didn't need to do that at all, right? So, I'm hoping that we can be a lot more productive in time management and stay on task now. So, it'll be interesting to see.
And that truly is, I mean, if you're going to look at a gift that's been given through all this, is the ability to examine all of everything that we do. I mean, it's happened in our business as well. You know, the same things you kind of said, oh, I need to go here to interview this guy for this story. Well, maybe I don't. Maybe there's another way I can do it. It's more cost effective. It's more productive. You know, this pause gives you time and gives your staff time to kind of, I guess, self-scout, right? And say, this is the way we've done things forever. Now maybe we can do them this way. And with the economic reality that we have, that's going to be an important part of coming out of this.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. No, change is always hard, right? But, if you don't do it, then we can't figure out how to make it better.
All right. I'm going to ask you the question. You've been an assistant GM now. This is your third day as an assistant GM as we record this on Thursday. Do you want to be a general manager? Come on. I mean, it's a long enough time as an assistant GM, right? No, is your goal now to be a GM? Has it ever been your goal? Does changing goals matter? I mean, I'm not going to push you. I mean, you might have a lot of time to learn and all that, but eventually is this something you aspire to do?
My goal has always been to just, be involved in this game and be as successful as I can at each thing that I do in this game. So now we've shifted into the AGM role, and my focus is to help Bill Zito and Paul Kopalka in any way that I can to be the best assistant general manager that I can. And that's singularly my focus right now. And that along with helping our club, when you spend as much time as I did and many other guys do in the minors, you have to think way down the road, but you can't get caught up in thinking about it too much, because then you lose focus on what the task is at hand.
I'm going to take you away from the NHL and away from the Florida Panthers for a minute, back to your New England roots. News came out earlier this week, no beanpot for the first time in the tournament's history. And you played in several beanpots at Boston College, and I'm and clearly have been to many as an agent and in your other roles in hockey. I'm curious, as somebody who's been a part of that tradition, what it means for it not to be this year and kind of your thoughts about it going forward.
Obviously it's a huge loss to the people of New England, not just Boston, but New England. It's the beanpot is one of the most special things in hockey. I mean, it's kids from Boston and Connecticut, New York, that grew up going to this game. As I remember when I was going to that game as a kid, and I mean, you couldn't sleep the night before because you were so excited. Your mom and dad would bring you the game. You knew you were probably going to get a fantastic meal before, a little pizza or something, and then you're going to go into that game, and it was going to be jam packed, and the energy was going to be great. So, it's a huge loss for all of us, right? It brought our town together for 2 days in the middle of the winter. And it brought alumni and hockey family together. So, I think that, we have to be smart and make sure that, everything's safe for people. I think it might make this thing, the beanpot, even more desirable, right? When you don't have something, you realize how awesome it is, when you did have it. So I'm hopeful that, maybe just a year off will reignite that excitement about the beanpot and bring everybody back in a big way in a year's time.
How many did you win?
We won two. We shot the gap, but we should have won more, but we won two.
last one from me. And we really appreciate your time here, Brett. Now you're with the Panthers and you talked a little bit about what you have down there. I wonder if you could just give an overview, a scouting report on what you think this team is made of. Whenever we get started, what do you think the Florida Panthers can do this season?
You know what? I think with the core group that's there, the coaching staff, the ownership, the management, the Florida Panthers are an exciting place to be right now. I think we're excited to have, you know, maximize the potential of the guys that we have on that roster, as well as start to attract so many other people to South Florida. You know, what is our outlook for this season? I mean, listen, we always play to win. Like that's why we play, right? So, and I don't think our vision is anything short of that. So our goal is going to be singularly is to work this team, whip it together, and with Coach Q and his staff, and try to put the best product out there that we can to chase that trophy.
Well, great, Brett. Thanks so much for joining us. Congratulations on what you've accomplished and what you're going to accomplish in the future. We really appreciate you taking the time to join the At The Rink podcast.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
Sean, it was great to get Brett Peterson on. Definitely congratulations to him. Good luck to him. And by the way, we're doing our 31 and 31 series on NHL.com right now. The Florida Panthers will be up on November 28th. Today, Thursday, the Buffalo Sabres are up. We've already done Anaheim, Arizona, and Boston. So we're in the fourth in. It's alphabetical order, and it really covers everything, soup to nuts, that you need to get to know about your team and the other teams in the league as you prepare for what's to come this coming season.
For sure, and we've done it for a number of years, and it encompasses everything, right? We kind of reset the rosters, you know, we just talked about it. Most of free agency is done and stuff for, you know, a few small pieces here and there. So you can kind of forecast what the rosters are going to look like. We look at the top prospects. You know, Rob Reese does a behind the numbers kind of statistical analysis. Pete Jensen does the fantasy focus for each team. And we answer the three biggest questions, right? So it's a lot of stuff, and if you want to get ready either for your pool season or for what your favorite team's going to look like or what the team you hate the most is going to look like, you know, this will serve you well. And then when we finish that, the third part of our trilogy is the actual team previews, which we'll do, you know, depending on when the season starts. But as of right now, if it's January 1st, you know, we would do two or three a day in mid-December. And yeah. So by the time you read all that stuff, you'll be ready for the season to start. So start diving in. You got a lot of time right now.
Yeah. And I shot a video for each of those 31 teams. We may have to reshoot a little bit here, but I had to do my research, no question about it, on all 31 teams. So it's definitely, you know, the place to go if you want to learn about what's going on with each team in the National Hockey League. All right. So our producer, Bob Bender, who runs the At The Rink Twitter account, he teased that we would do this. So let's do it before we get to our next guest, John LeClair, the U.S. Hockey Hall of Famer and the former Flyers, great member of the Legion of Doom line. Kevin Weeks, our good buddy, at Kevin Weeks on Twitter, he tweeted out, Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. Your team is up 1-0 with 10 seconds remaining in the third period. Defensive zone faceoff in the right circle. Which center from any era do you want taking the draw? Sean, you're up.
I'm going to go a little outside of the box. There's a ton of really big names you could think about, right? Yzerman, all those guys that, you know, Messier, whoever you want to think about, that, you know, just great centers. But to me, faceoff taking is an art, and there are people that do it really well. And there was one guy that was traded several times late in his career because he could take a face off, you know, and that's Yannick Perreault. And, you know, that's the guy I would take. He was in the playoffs of guys that played more than 200 games. He's third on the list, right? At well over 60%. So if you want to win that face off, I think you put in a guy that pretty much spent his career studying other centers, studying the linesmen. Like, that's how serious these guys get that are really good at it. They have books on the linesmen and how they drop the puck and when they drop it and where in the circle it is. It's something that happens so often in our game that I think we take it for granted a lot. But you know, that's the guy that I would go with.
That's a good choice because Antoine Vermette was excellent in the faceoff circle.
But I said Yannick Perreault. Antoine Vermette was also excellent in the faceoff circle.
Why did I say Antoine Vermette?
Because he's another guy. They're almost clones of each other. He's another guy that was great in the faceoff that was known for that.
I meant Yannick Perreault.
So, you know, maybe that's the guy taking the offensive zone faceoff at that point. But, yeah, no, look, there's no wrong answers. And I know you have some good answers that you're going to throw out. But so maybe it's 1A and 1B. It's Yannick Perreault and Antoine Vermette.
See, Antoine Vermette was on my head. That's why I said it. I don't know why. He is one of those guys, though. But I'm not going to overthink this too much. Patrice Bergeron, right? Patrice Bergeron is the best faceoff guy in the NHL right now. Maybe one of the best. Definitely one of the best in NHL history. He's 58% to 60%, you know, across the board, whatever zone you're in. He's a righty. And look, we're talking about 10 seconds left, game seven, and you're up 1-0. I'm going to get into the weeds here as we talked, you know. You're a righty. You win it back to the point. You can kill that 10 seconds and you can celebrate a Stanley Cup. I want Patrice Bergeron, regardless of where it is on the ice, regardless of, you know, right-handed, left-handed, whatever it may be. I want Patrice Bergeron taking my face off. And that's my guy. I mean, that, I don't see how you, there's a lot of names you could throw out there, but I mean, he's 58 to 60% across the board, wherever he is.
The other thing that I think goes into this equation, and two other guys I would seriously think about, and Patrice Bergeron clearly fits that bill, is you want a guy who knows how to win to take that face off. Not knows how to win a face off. That's important, but knows how to win and will do the thing that you need done to win. Right. So I would put Jonathan Toews in that equation, and I would put Sidney Crosby in that equation just because they're winners. And they'll do whatever it takes. And I, you know, we're talking a lot about winning a faceoff. The thing that you can't do in that situation is lose a faceoff, right? So you want a guy that's going to tie it up and is going to let the wings come in and is going to, you know, let other people actually help kill those 10 seconds. So, you know, we talk about winning percentages and there's a winner and a loser in every faceoff, but it's not fair the way that they're given winners and losers, because it's so often it's a second and third guy helping. So, you know, I would put some guys that, you know, are winners and not in the faceoff circle, but just in general, really smart players, you know? So like I mentioned Yzerman earlier, but I would put Toews and Crosby in there as well.
Yeah. Let me correct something, because I said it's a defensive zone faceoff. So you're not winning it back to the point. You're winning it back to the corner. With that, and then with you can rim it around and, you know, kill those 10 seconds. But you're 100% right. You want somebody who's going to tie it up at the very least and kill five of those seconds before the puck can even gain a possession for either side. Ryan Kessler would be another guy that I would put in there in that mix as well. So it was a real interesting question, and there's about 400 or 450 replies there on Kevin Weeks's tweet. So go check it out and see, put your reply in. At Kevin Weeks is where you can find it. He doesn't tweet that much, so it's very easy to find.
We're gonna have to enlist him to do the question of the week.
Maybe we should start a question of the week. How about that? And we'll put it out there and we'll see what kind of responses we get, and then we can talk about it and give our answers. I like it. That's a new segment that will be coming up in our next podcast. How about that?
Stealing is the best form of flattery.
It is. And maybe you're right. Maybe we have to have Kevin do the question, because his specifics on this one were, you know, I mean, this was like a scientific question here that he gave out there. Anyway, let's get to our next guest, John LeClair. As I teased, U.S. Hockey Hall of Famer, former Philadelphia Flyer greats, member of the Legion of Doom line. We were able to catch up with him, and here's that interview with John LeClair. John, thanks so much for joining us. So you're like us now, huh? Just waiting for hockey season to get going again, and hopefully it'll get going again soon. And you're a fan now, right?
I am a fan. I've always been a fan. And, you know, it's kind of fun to just kind of watch and enjoy and not, you know, be on the other side of the winning and losing matters so much. So and I'm enjoying it.
Before we get to more current events, what did you think of the playoffs this year? Your Flyers played pretty well, and just the tournament as a whole, as an outsider who's been through Stanley Cup playoffs and been to the mountain, as you watched it kind of play out this year at a different time and a different scenario, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, we all know it wasn't your typical NHL playoffs, obviously, but you know, I thought the NHL and the players, they did a great job with it. They embraced it. You know, they didn't complain, and they just went out there. And you know, I think everybody thought, really, you know, with that time off, that you know, wasn't going to be playoff hockey, this and that, but I found it very exciting. I found the level incredibly high for those guys being off as long as they were, and getting right back into it. So I thought it was exciting from day one. I thought they did a great job out of pretty much all the major sports. I think to me, they pulled it off the best as far as grabbing that excitement back and, you know, making it feel as much as normal as they could.
Were you surprised at all by the level of play and how quickly it came back and the level of intensity? Especially, I mean, you're used to playing when you played. I mean, the buildings were crowded and fans were on top of each other and all that, and they didn't have any fans in the building.
Well, absolutely. I thought for the time off, the short camp to get the legs moving again, the level was incredibly high. I thought the games were right there on par with most playoff games. You know, it is disappointing. You win the cup and you lift the cup to an empty building. But, like I said, the players did a great job of just adapting and accepting the situation, and they made the most of it. And, congratulations to Tampa. They took full advantage of it. In my mind, it's no less of a Stanley Cup than, the great Montreal Canadiens in 93.
That's the question I was going to ask you. So many people on the outside have said, oh, this is an asterisk year. This is, this doesn't count the same. It wasn't the same conditions. There wasn't travel. There wasn't any of that. Opinions are opinions. Everybody has them. But I tend to value the opinions of people who experienced it, which you did with Montreal in 93, as you mentioned. And so when you look at it, do you see it as the same experience?
It is not the same experience, but it was the same amount of work put into it is the way I look at it. I mean, obviously the experience is a little different because I think it does matter going into another building in a playoff game. I think that does have some effect on how things kind of shake out with things. But they still had to win 16 games. It was still as much of a grind as it is anywhere, absent the travel. I think they more than well deserve the Stanley Cup. I don't think to me there's any asterisk next to it.
And John, I mean, you're a legend among Flyer fans. And so when you're a legend among Flyer fans, they want to hear your opinion on the Flyers. What is your opinion on the Flyers? Like, what's your takeaway from what they were able to do last season? First one under Alain Vigneault. What do you like about this team right now? Do you think they're a legitimate contender whenever we get going again?
I absolutely think they're a legitimate contender. I think they're going to be in anybody's conversation when they talk about the top teams in for a chance for the Stanley Cup. I actually thought it was disappointing how they finished last year. They were on such a roll going into the lockdown of the COVID stuff that I think it really uprooted what they had going. I don't think they played as well in that bubble as they would have liked to. But the future looks incredibly bright. It looks like they found a goalie for many years to come. They got some young D that can really play that there's a lot to be excited about. And, up front, they have some talented forwards that can put the puck in the net. So, they seem to have all the elements. I think there's still a little bit of growing that can be done there. But it's a team that it's something to be very excited about.
Well, Giroux's kind of that next in the line that's gone along from you and Eric on down. When you look at Claude and the way that he leads the team and the way that he plays, what do you see?
I see a leader by example. I think, when I watch games and I see G kind of pick things up, I notice the team really falls behind him. It seems like from an outsider, I'm not privy to what goes on in that locker room, but it seems that, when he people follow his lead and he seems to have the respect of those guys and, which all great captains do. And he's doing a good job leading them. I think, when you look at how these young guys are developing, a lot of that's on the coaching staff, but, a lot of that's on the older veteran players, especially your captain too, to bring these guys in, make them feel comfortable and make them perform the best they can.
And there's also another Flyer I wanted to ask about, Sean Couturier. He wins the Selke Trophy. And when you first saw him to what he is now, as he developed into the player that you would have imagined him becoming in that Selke Trophy conversation regularly, finally winning it the last season?
Oh, absolutely. He's always been a strong defensive player. And the last couple of years, his offense has really picked up. But, the guy's just – he's so strong on his stick. He, every 50-50 puck battle, he wins. And he's a real smart player. And when you look at those Selke players, they really high hockey IQs, the Bergerons and like you said, Couturiers. Those guys really know the game. They see the game a step ahead. And he has that ability. He really does. I think he sees plays develop a step ahead and gets them in position to either break them up or go the other way and makes them very effective.
John, you've done a good job of breaking down some of the Flyers now, and it kind of leads into your next venture, which is coaching and being a part of the Three Ice and being one of the eight coaches that are going to coach in that league when it starts in the summer of 21. I'm curious, this is your first coaching venture, is it not?
Well, I coached my little guys a little bit growing up, but I'm not going to really count that one. as far as being behind the bench with professionals and stuff like that, it will be. I'm looking forward to it. I think the league's going to be incredibly exciting. I think hockey fans everywhere are going to love it. It's going to be fast-paced, a lot of skill, and it's just something that I think everybody loves overtime. They love the 3-on-3 overtime, and you're going to get a full 2.5 hours of this, and it's going to be nothing but great hockey.
Could this be your first foray into a second career in the game? Do you want to coach?
You know, well, we'll see how it goes. I enjoy the game. I still have a passion for the game. But I also enjoy some of the other things I have outside of hockey right now. So, let's see how this goes. But I think this is going to be, really successful. And the excitement I have for it, maybe it is. Maybe it's something that I want to pursue further, because I'm really looking forward to, June of next year to get this thing going.
You as a player didn't really get to experience that type of hockey, right? You played kind of in a more of a clutch and grab type of atmosphere. Overtime was different, and now when you look at it, 3-on-3 has lived for a while, and people have come to accept it. New fans, that's all that they know. Are you surprised that you enjoy it as much as you did? Because there was, when it happened, there was so much establishment gnashing of the teeth about how the very fabric of the game would be changed by this 3-on-3 overtime.
I think it's how you kind of view how you want to go through life. I mean, do you want to be stuck and not try to get better? And I mean, I'm not saying you get better by making crazy rules and changing the whole concept of the game, but you got to evolve. And I think, that's part of it. With the clutching and grabbing, we had so many talented players that were just passed on because they weren't 6 foot and they weren't, 200 pounds. They couldn't fight through that stuff. When I watch the game today, back compared to, 20 years ago when I was playing, it is more exciting. There's some things I don't like as much. I'd like to see a little bit more physical play as far as hitting, clean body checks and things like that. But as far as the speed and the skill, it's off the charts. And I think it makes it a very exciting game.
Do you think, John, that the good teams, the really good teams in the game today, could play in that mid-90s era? Could they transfer over and play that style too, or at least bring what they bring and have force teams to play their type of game?
Well, I think it depends when you talk about what style of team. Like, you look at the teams that are successful right now, it's the teams that are skilled, but they have some grit to them. Like when you look at when St. Louis won that Stanley Cup, they did it through finishing checks that whole for 4 rounds. They finished checks. They wore people down and they had skill to put the puck in the net. They were a complete team. I think some of these teams that you have today are a little bit heavy on the skill, and sometimes they can get intimidated or not run out of the building, but they can be taken physically out of the game sometimes. So you got to have a good mixture of that. And I think the right team with the right mixture like that could easily more than compete back in that day.
Would you want to see, if there was a way to do it, would you want to see the best against the best, like from that generation against this generation, and play against the other way as well? Like, and maybe when whoever's home gets to play by the rules they played with when they were playing.
Yeah. I mean, that's all video game stuff, and you can, this and that. I mean, it's hard to say. Gordie Howe is the greatest, one of the greatest players over time. How would he do today? It's not comparing the same things. So it's really hard to say. I mean, but like anything, the game's evolved, and it's just like in any sport. The guys today are better than the guys that played 20 years ago, and they were better than the guys that they played 20 years before them. And that's just how sports evolves.
All right. So we have you. So I have to ask this. I want to go back to the naming of your line, the Legion of Doom, which is still my favorite line, name for a line in hockey. When did you first hear that? And what was your reaction when you first heard Legion of Doom?
We first heard it from a reporter. I think, we had a couple of good games and the reporters were going around talking to other players on the team, what they thought of, watching us play and stuff like that. Jimmy Montgomery, who never seemed to have a quiet moment in the locker room, came up with that phrase and it kind of stuck. And, when the reporters asked you about it, we were kind of just, let's play hockey. If you guys need to call it something or, to do something to fill your pages, that's great. But I don't think any one of us ever really took it that serious or really, got into it that much, to tell you the truth.
What about now? We were talking earlier in the show. It's maybe the most iconic line nickname. You had the punch line and the production line and, other lines, but the Legion of Doom might be the most iconic name. As you've gotten older and you've gotten away from the game and it's lived on beyond your career, beyond Michael's career, beyond Eric's career, do you have a little more appreciation for your place in history with that?
I think it's, when you can be remembered in a positive way, it's always a great feeling. And, I think fans are a little bit more excited to say that to me than I am, but, I do appreciate it. And, I do get it that, it's catchy. The fans like it and yeah, it is. It's an honor to be something that you can remembered for something like that. I'm proud of that.
You don't have it on your business card?
I don't. The tattoo on my neck, other than that, I'm all set.
Well, the whole line is Philly, Legion of Doom. It's perfect for Philly. John, before we let you go, so you're going to be coaching in Three Ice, which, by the way, will start in June of 2021, June 20th, 2021. What else do you have going on right now? And I got to ask, too, in normal times, are you skating still? Are you playing any hockey?
I didn't play when I retired for like 8 years. Didn't put them on. I coached my kids a little bit. That's the only thing I got on the ice for. And then we had a couple alumni games. We played an outdoor alumni game here. And I was like, well, I'd like to play in that. So I figured I better get at least a couple shifts in before I go out there and embarrass myself. And I picked it up. I got a group of buddies here that they play every Wednesday night. It's the same group. Everybody knows each other. It's a bunch of laughs. But I'm having a great time with it. I've been doing some charity events too, up in Canada with the Easter Steel stuff, which is fun. Spend a weekend with some guys, play a couple games. And it's a lot of fun. I'm really enjoying being back on the ice now. And it's something I enjoy. I didn't think I would enjoy it that much, but I do.
Hey, John, I just want to go back to Three Ice for a minute. We talked a little bit about, how exciting the 3-on-3 is going to be. I'm curious. I've read a little bit about it, but there's two things. One is I can't imagine sharing that coach's room as you go from city to city with 8 Hall of Fame coaches. It's an unbelievable collection. But what is the playing pool going to be like? What do you have an idea of what you're drawing from?
Yeah, we're going to be drawing from NHLers that are just finishing up their career or some of the, NHL players that are in between that are looking for contracts and stuff like that. So it's going to be a very high level of talent. There's going to be maybe some NHL players that are on the top of their game too, that are looking for tryouts and stuff like that. It'll give them a chance to showcase their skill for training camp in the fall. For a guy that's just got done, still can skate, wants to play a little bit, you can get a chance to get out there and play some 3-on-3, have some fun at a competitive level. It's going to be competitive. I don't know if you know the format, but each city we go to, there's 8 teams, and it's going to be a mini tournament. First 4 play, 4 eliminated, you move on until you have a winner in that city. So they're going to keep league standing, so you'll know at the end of the year who's going to be champion. And, there's something to play for. Like I said, that part of the competitiveness plus, the open ice, being able to show your stuff, it's going to be very attractive, I think, to a lot of guys that are looking for a place or that are just kind of finished up but still got that itch to play.
That's great stuff. And good luck with it. Have a lot of fun with it, John. Thanks so much for joining us, all right?
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys. Anytime.
Great getting John on and catching up with him, Sean. And he, you mentioned it. He is part of a list of coaches in this Three Ice professional league. Joey Mullen, Grant Fuhr, Brian Trottier, Larry Murphy, Guy Carboneau, Eddie Johnston, Angela Ruggiero. That's a, I mean, I would like to just be a fly on the wall in the coach's room at each city that they go to, just to hear from these eight. That'd be great.
Oh, I can't imagine the stories, right? When they all get together after the games are over and before they move on to the next town. The stories would be unbelievable. What I would like to see is some of them are still relatively young. They should play. They should play the champion at the end.
I was going to bring it up with John and say, hey, you're back skating with some of your buddies. Why don't you play a little 3-on-3 here? I mean, you know, I mean, he could probably still skate around and handle it.
Maybe put those guys on the ice. You put Grant in that, right? You got Angela playing D. She's only a few years retired. You got some pretty good scorers there. That'd be a fun little championship after it's all over. Winner take all.
You know who do it?
Maybe they could draft a couple of young guys just to make it interesting.
Trottier would do it in a heartbeat, probably.
They all would. Competitive. Absolutely. That's why they're doing this. So,
although I don't know that they would want to get beaten by a bunch of kids, you know, a bunch of guys who are doing it for real. I don't know that they'd want that to happen.
Like I said, they get three wild cards and make it interesting.
Yeah, no question about it. So that's really cool stuff, and we're great to get him on. Other than that, we do have to bring it up. We have to mention it's Hockey Fights Cancer Month. It's the 22nd campaign. Look, it's a little different. Obviously, normally the NHL is playing at this time during Hockey Fights Cancer Month, but still lots of programming going on. We've seen the CN Tower up in Toronto. It's lit up in lavender. You can go to NHL.com and catch up on stories. Oscar Lindblom, Shea Theodore, Kyle Quincy with his son, Dale Howard, Chuck. Lots of stuff. It's to bring awareness to this initiative, to bring awareness to everything. And always an interesting, heartwarming, heart-wrenching at times month. But a key point of the hockey season is going on right now, even though it's not hockey season.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing is we normally do this early on in the hockey year, and NHL's Hockey Fights Cancer is able to use all the tools of in-game presentation, you know, high traffic on the website to help generate. The idea behind this, all of this, is to raise awareness and to raise funds for hockey. Yeah. Hockey Fights Cancer, right? For the American Cancer Society and the Canadian Cancer Society. So every charity's taken a hit during COVID between, you know, the hard financial times and the lack of visibility because of what's going on. So, you know, it's great to still try and get that message out there. And you know, NHL.com's done a great job of it, I think, so far this month with some of the stories that you mentioned and some other stories that we've done. So, you know, let's just keep these charities, which do so much work for cancer, fighting cancer, and we all want to see cancer end. We've all been impacted by it at some point. So, you know, if you have the opportunity to give, please give. If you don't, read the stories and be inspired and help in the fight in any way you can.
No, absolutely. And you can, you know, make bids at NHL auctions too, auctions.nhl.com/HFC for Hockey Fights Cancer. There's a big social push as well. So lots of it everywhere, even though it's not technically on the ice at this point. But that'll do it for this one. We will not have a podcast next week, Thanksgiving week here in the United States. So Sean, I hope you have a great Thanksgiving.
Me too. I hope it's going to be awesome. It's going to be different. Well, I'm not going home to Rhode Island for the first time since covering high school football when I wasn't able to go because, as you know, Dan, Thanksgiving's a big high school football day here
it's
in New
huge.
Jersey. Yeah, and we would get a meal from the Brownstone in Patterson every year. That would be our Thanksgiving dinner. So this is the first time I haven't been home in more than a decade, and that's a little bit different. But we'll make a new tradition here, as I'm sure you will. I'm already menu planning and you know, there's still a lot to be thankful for, and we plan to celebrate it next week, and then we'll be back hopefully the week after that, and we'll be getting ready to actually figure out what we're going to do for hockey this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I am looking forward to it. It will be a little bit different. Look at you giving the Brownstone a pop in Patterson, New Jersey. They'll enjoy that if they listen. It's different. No podcast next week, hopefully by the end of that, but when we're back, maybe we'll have some news. Until then, everybody stay safe out there.